that influence. In reality, he's not. I recognized the greatest benefit of having a father who really only cared about medicine. I was able to invite Donnelly everywhere, and Donnelly always said yes and came along. I unsnap a rubber band off a package. Joanna is finally going through with it? I ask Oscar, since I witnessed the Oliveira family meltdown when she refused to get confirmed 2 years ago. I wasn't raised in a religious household, but her decision appeared like a familial betrayal. Quinn chimes in. Only because our avos stopped talking to Joe. He uncovers an alien plushie from tissue paper. Thatcher pockets his invite. If I'd been confirmed late, my grandma would have done the same to me. Oscar discards a Charlie motherfucking cobalt mug. She's lucky that I'm picking up our avo from the airport next week. I skim another get well card. You volunteer for that, Oliveira, or were you selected for the slaughter? My confirmation gift to my baby sister, he explains, slicing open another box. What'd I miss when Charlie went to the bar? He means from tonight. We all joined in trivia with the famous ones, but we were also on duty. Consequently, Oscar had to follow his client away from our booth. I trash homemade chocolate chip cookies. Just how Ben hasn't been able to drive since the crash? Donnelly adds. Jane said his foot keeps shaking on the pedal. I have 15 years of driving experience on Ben, and I was having issues keeping the Range Rover on all four wheels that night. Quinn hurls an empty box at the fireplace. Paparazzi should have backed the fuck off. They won't, Akara says, flipping through a handcrafted Sullivan Meadows scrapbook. The best the parents can do is keep filing lawsuits. But none have stuck yet. The Hales, Meadows, and Cobalts have all requested that the bodyguards drive for the younger kids until further notice. Donnelly rattles his open mailer upside down, and a lacy thong falls to the floor. We all see it. Smell it, Donnelly, I say with a rising smile. Could be the mystery scent. He pinches the pink thong between gloved fingers and sniffs. Quinn gags into his fist. Nah, Donnelly says. Just smells like pussy. He flings the panties into the trash and reads the card aloud. Beckett Joyce Cobalt, I came in these thinking of you. He smirks. My guy has so many admirers. Silently, Thatcher dumps a ball gag and dildo into the trash, all mailed to Jane. Oscar swigs a Ziff sports drink and reads, Dear Charlie, I want to have your babies. She left her phone number. Can't blame her. Donnelly reaches for a new package. Who wouldn't want to have some cobalt babies? Thatcher casts a reprimanding look but stays quiet. I spin a knife between my fingers and then point to myself with the blade. Me? Donnelly grins. That's just because you're all up in that hail, Dick. I laugh into a smile, about to dish it back, and then the unknown stench unleashes itself tenfold. We all recoil. It's this, Quinn chokes and coughs into his bicep. He just flipped the flaps to a cardboard box, the contents not visible. Everyone is asking what was sent to Luna. I'm about to stand off the bar stool and see for myself, but Quinn starts taping up the package. Then he rises to his feet and places the box in Luna's wicker basket. Whoa! All of us basically shout some sort of expletive. Quinn ignores us, leaving the package in her good mail. Thatcher glares at me as though I caused the youngest bodyguard's bad behavior from my short mentoring days. I'm not taking the blame for this shit. I glare back at Thatcher. I quit. Slinging those two words out in anger is not what I had in mind today. I bite my tongue hard. It's not trash, Quinn says, still choked from the smell. He coughs into his fist. Akara digs in the wicker basket and inspects the taped package. What the fuck is it? Oscar asks. Quinn takes a seat around his mail piles. Really shitty perfume that's split. My brows spike. Sounds like trash to me. Thatcher crosses his arms. Farrell, you should have instructed Quinn better. Told him that liquids need to be thrown out. I did. His assumption that I didn't grates on me. I grit down to keep from spewing out, I'm quitting, you fucking tool. Instead, I say simply, I'll keep that in mind. While I stand, I rest my shoulders up against the brick wall. Thatcher uncrosses his arms. He looks surprised that I'm admitting fault. Akara carries the perfume package to the trash bag. Wait! Quinn springs to his feet and extends an arm, an angered scowl crossing his face. Just wait a fucking second. I know what I'm doing. Akar raises his shoulders. Quinn, we don't allow liquids.
Luna asked me not to, Quinn retorts. I get that I haven't been a bodyguard as long as any of you, but I've been here long enough. And I fucking know if a client asks you to do something, you do it. Sometimes, even if it's illegal.
No, Thatcher says sternly. Not if it's illegal. You can say no. His glare drills into me again. I'm starting to believe Quinn Oliveira wants Thatcher to murder me. I still lean casually on the wall, and to Thatcher I say, I never told Quinn that he couldn't say no. That implication is not even close to who I am. Wait a sec, Akara interjects, box in hand. Quinn, did Luna specifically ask you not to discard liquids? Quinn scratches his unshaven jaw.
No, I was trying to keep this private. But if you all have to know,
he motions to the box.
Luna asked me not to throw anything away that's from her boyfriend.
Boyfriend? Voices collide together, everyone asking the same shit. I peel off my gloves and then comb my hair back. If anyone had known about Luna Hale suddenly having a boyfriend, it would have been her older brother. And Maximoff knows nothing. I question whether this boyfriend is real. Have you seen him? I ask on top of the mounting questions.
When?
Donnelly asks. For how long? Akara wonders. Quinn runs two frustrated hands through his thick, wavy hair.
My God, he snaps. Shut the fuck up and I'll tell you.
We all go quiet. Quinn breathes out.
It's been about a week.
He shifts his weight, and before Akara asks, he says,
Yeah, I did a background check. The guy panned out.
Donnelly slips a pen behind his ear. Does he live in Philly?
How old is he? I ask. What does he do?
Oscar adds. Quinn hangs onto the fireplace mantle.
This stays between us.
He tries to send a warning look my way, but I'm not having it. I'll tell you up front, I say easily. There's absolutely 100% chance that I'll share this with Maximoff. He frowns.
Why?
Because he's my boyfriend. It's as simple as that. Oscar leans forward on his stool. Redford can leave the room. I want the fucking details.
Same,
Donnelly says, unsnapping his gloves just to remove his septum piercing. Quinn expels a breath and then nods to me.
Ah, it's all right. Stay. I'm guessing Luna will tell Maximoff soon, so it shouldn't matter.
He starts unleashing the news.
So the guy's named Andrew Umbers, 22. He's originally from Houston, but now lives in Philly. He created some kind of startup for a parking app, and yeah, I've seen him.
Everyone is quiet, processing. Thatcher straightens the letters in his hands.
Did Luna tell you not to share?
No. I have no fucking clue what she'd think if I told everyone,
Quinn admits.
And look, before you guys say anything, you should know that their dates have consisted of eating takeout at his apartment and listening to NPR. It feels like he's just using her.
I grit down. I'm not happy about anyone using these families, let alone the Hales.
This is exactly why most of them have trust issues. And I sense the real irony here. The public believes I'm using her brother for fame.
But I'm not going to apologize for loving him and wanting to be with him. We talk about Luna and the intentions of her new boyfriend, mainly ways to protect her, and I hang back and look at each guy. This is it. I've had some of them in my lives long before I joined security, so I'm not losing them. But I am leaving behind Omega, the camaraderie, the brotherhood, a protective force of men who will jump into the wildfire, no questions asked. And I've been here before. Way back when, I believed I'd lose my job once the families and security found out I was with Maximoff. I was ready to accept that. But there is more peace in choosing this path now than being forced here back then.
Redford, Oscar calls out.
What's going on?
He's been reading into my features.
I have something to say.
I comb both of my hands through my hair and step off the brick wall. My shift in demeanor causes the living room to go silent. Akara is confused.
I didn't tell anyone in advance, not even the Omega lead, and that's mostly because I need this to be less of an ordeal. Just quiet and easy. Not a big mess.
This isn't about Luna, I start off. I appreciate everything you've all done for me so I could remain my boyfriend's bodyguard. I glance briefly at Thatcher, because back in December he was the deciding vote that helped me keep my job. He's scowling like I'm far from genuine. If I didn't believe those words, I wouldn't have said them. I swing my head to the Omega lead. And Akara,
Oh, Captain, my Captain. I wouldn't call anyone else that but him. All the times you put your neck on the fucking line for me, I was grateful then and I'm still grateful now. Akara nods. You're quitting security, aren't you? Yeah, I say. I'm quitting. I need to finish my residency. And before they ask, I add, not for my father, but for me. I first look at Donnelly. His lips slowly lift, unlit cigarette in his mouth. We're getting our Meredith back. He slow claps. I smile. Man, you know I'm a Christina. I don't get it, Quinn mutters. It's Grey's Anatomy, little bro, Oscar says, clapping with Donnelly before he walks over and pats my shoulder, bringing me in a hug. He whispers in my ear, we're gonna keep your guy safe. Don't agonize over it. I already have been. A hell of a lot went into this choice, and I look at ease, but he knows this is far from easy for me. Someone else will be filling the job description of protecting Maximoff Hale. As his boyfriend, that job should be mine. I protect the people I love, and choosing the medical path sometimes feels at war with protecting Maximoff. But I have to remember that I haven't lost that ability. At the charity auction, I was there for him as his boyfriend in the end, not as his bodyguard. And the same job got done. I don't need the radio or the gun or the title. I pat his back in thanks before we separate. You sure? Akara asks me, phone frozen in his hand. He holds the power to alert the rest of the Triforce, to turn my choice into a reality. I listen to my gut that says, push forward. I'm sure. Akara hesitates, looking like he wants to change my mind, but after a pause and a once-over, he sees that I'm set, and he starts texting. You'll need to stay on Maximoff's detail for one more week while we sort out a transfer. He looks up. Sound good? Perfect. I already knew the protocol. I packed most of my shit. I'll be out of security's townhouse before then. It'll be more official than it has been, but I'll be living with Maximoff. And I've never officially lived with any of my past boyfriends before, so this is just as new for me. Thatcher should be ecstatic that I'm no longer living one floor apart from him. I'm not expecting the guy to jump for joy, but a mocking clap seems in the realm of possibility. But as our eyes lock, he appears the farthest thing from happy. And I'm certain he's going to make this difficult for me. Messy and fucking loud. Thatcher, you've had one foot in, one foot out from the start. I told you that months ago. He tears off his latex gloves. And I've known you're committed only to yourself. But I didn't realize how fucking selfish you are until right now. His biting tone is dying to gnaw me apart. I run my tongue over my molars, seething inside out. At first, I want to just let him believe what he believes. My actions haven't been able to convince him anything different. Not the marathon run in the dark Poconos Mountains, not every push-up, every sit-up, every time I listened when I would have rather disobeyed. If he wants words, not actions, then I have those too. Wherever I am, I'm all there. I say strongly. I've always been committed to security, and the fucking millisecond that I felt drawn somewhere else, I chose to leave. That's the truth. But Thatcher glares. I glare, stepping further off the wall, and he says, that's how you plan to spin this? My nose flares, hot-blooded anger craving to twist my face. There is nothing more I can give him than what I feel. He's still choosing not to believe me. I'm not warping shit, I tell him. If you don't see it the way I see it, then fine, leave it alone. Akara, Quinn, Oscar, and Donnelly all stand rigid, watching, tensed, but not surprised that we're butting heads again. Thatcher steps over a pile of mailers, rolling the sleeves of his plaid flannel, like he's boiling as hot as me. He nears me and says, did you even consider Maximoff when you decided to quit on him? I glare unblinkingly. He's dead serious. He truly believes that I don't give a flying shit about Maximoff. I almost let out a pained laugh. Fuck, I'd do anything for him. I'd even chose security for Maximoff. But here's the thing. Maximoff would resent me. Every day, every minute he'd hate me. We are so alike in that we want to give each other what we need. And he wouldn't, for a second, let me stay in security out of chivalry. Wow, I say flatly. Did I even consider my boyfriend when I made a life-altering choice that would directly affect him? Of course I did. Of course I've struggled. Of course I beat myself up at the terrible timing.
But I'm the one who wakes up to those forest greens that scream, "Don't coddle me, just love me. Just love me." Not this fucker. "Your client, your boyfriend, just broke his collarbone," Thatcher spits out, pointing at my chest. "He just had surgery and lost his job, and you chose this moment to quit on him. Say that shit again, and we're gonna have bigger problems," I sneer. "When one of us quits, we have to hire someone new," he growls, unable to stop spewing more. "And these families have to learn to trust a stranger to protect them all over again." His glare grows hotter in a single pause. "Your client, the guy you left behind, will get someone new in his life. You should be worried about that after what's happened between you two." I hear what he's insinuating. "You don't know what the hell you're talking about. I know Maximov is impressionable." He cups a hand around his fist, like he knows what he's about to say will set me the fuck off. "If he fell for someone like you, he'd have no problem falling for his new bodyguard." I explode forward to hit him. I'm gonna fucking slam my fist in his fucking face, and then Oscar wrenches me back, my feet smashing boxes, and he means well by restraining me. But the other guys don't catch Thatcher in enough time. I jerk in Oscar's grip as a reflex, seeing the pair of knuckles, and my friend lets go too late. Thatcher's fist slams into my cheek. My head whips, the stinging pain familiar from all the blows I've taken in a ring. Yells pierce the air. Oscar shoves Thatcher backwards and Donnelly tries to jump the 6'7" guy, but Akara stops another fight from breaking out. I don't move. I'm staring at the floorboards, my self-restraint greater than my rage, and I look to the door that connects the two townhouses. And I'm confident about where I want to be and where I need to go. Tuning out SFO, I head to the adjoining door to find Maximov. It opens before I even grab the knob, and my boyfriend fills the doorway. He looks at the welt on my face, and then his eyes basically murder Thatcher 100 different ways. Maximov almost charges. "Wolf Scout," I say, quickly putting a hand on his waist. Guiding him into his townhouse, I kick the door closed behind me, my smile almost rising. Maximov trying to protect me has definitely become one of my all-time favorite things. His thick hair is disheveled like he just sprung out of bed, and his drawstring pants ride low like he's just raced down the staircase. He must have heard the shouting. He holds my hip and glowers at the door like he's cursing Thatcher for eternal damnation. He really wants to go back in there and fight on my behalf. I can't stop staring at him, feeling how much he cares about me. His hand rises to my cheek, hovering over the welt. I clutch his hand in mine and lower them to our sides. "He fucking hit you," he says. I nod a few times. "I love that you want to stick up for me, but among other things, your dominant arm is bound to your chest." Maximov glances at his red sling, then looks right at me. "I'm stronger than you with just one arm." I laugh. Shit, I can't believe I'm laughing after that shit show. But he brings me this effortless joy, and I cling on to that for dear fucking life. "He took you quitting that badly?" he asks. "I'll catch you up in the car." And before he asks, I tell him, "We're going to my old neighborhood, and I'm gonna talk to my father. Right now. There's not a better time than the present, because there will never be a good time." Maximov doesn't question the abruptness. As soon as I start to lead him to the garage, he's pace for pace in step with me, hand in hand, like a soldier prepared for love and war. 16. Pharaoh Keen. "Door's unlocked. I'll be in the sunroom. Dad." No face-to-face verbal contact in almost 4 years, and that was his reply. I only messaged him that I wanted to talk in person and that I was on my way to his house with Maximov. I can't even be surprised by my father's lack of enthusiasm. It's not like I texted, "I'm returning to medicine, you're welcome." I'm treating this interaction like a meeting with a college professor. That's all it really is. Maximov knows this too. It's why he didn't ask to change clothes to impress my father. He's shirtless, still in the same drawstring pants that hang low on his muscular waist. His ass looks great, but he wouldn't catch me checking him out, even if I waved a hand in front of his face. Because as soon as we enter the foyer and hallway, he soaks up our surroundings, like he's placing my younger self everywhere. I watch him with a growing smile.
He's lost in the decor of Italian painters and overflowing vases of wildflowers. He looks up at the vaulted glass ceiling and down at the marble floors beneath his scuffed timberlands. Where his family home is warm and inviting, mine is a poster child for blue-blooded pretentiousness. Maximoff glances at the dining room's table set for 12.
Did your house look like this when you grew up here?
I toss my head from side to side. Somewhat. Less paintings. Rachel is an art collector. I remind him in case he forgot. He knows my stepmom moved in around the time I went to college. We turn a corner into an open living room, cigar bar, and upscale kitchen. I put a piece of gum in my mouth. He zones in on the baby grand piano near a towering bookcase.
You can play? He asks.
I leave his side and approach the piano. I look over my shoulder.
Can you, Wolf Scout?
Maximoff gestures to me.
I asked you first, man.
He can't play. I pop a bubble in my mouth. How badly are you hoping I'm a shit pianist because you are? My fingers brush the keys.
Who said I was a shit piano player? He combats. Maybe I'm the best there ever was, the goddamn best piano player of all piano players.
My brows rise. You're definitely the most conceited pianist. Every time I say pianist, he grimaces a little bit. He nears me while I rest my knee on the velveteen bench. He skims my hands that hover over the keys.
So you can't play either,
Maximoff concludes, since I'm prolonging this and he's impatient as hell. And you just admitted that you can't play. I point out and sweep him in a low-burning once-over. He's trying fucking hard not to smile. He licks his lips, eyeing my mouth.
I didn't say that.
I love when you pretend to have amnesia. I smile as he breathes out heavily in agitation, just wanting me to hurry this shit up. But I could bask in this moment for hours on end. Pharaoh, he starts. I bang on the keys harshly. Shrill chords jumble and pitch the air. I watch his smile take shape like he beat me.
You like that?
I asked huskily. His forest greens pour through my brown eyes, so many yeses, and I'm tempted to draw closer.
Pharaoh.
That's not Maximoff. With no urgency, I retract my hands from the piano, the room deadening. Maximoff rigidly faces my father, and I glance over at the old man. He stuffs his hands into khaki slacks, sporting a warm smile. His brown hair is tied back in a small pony, graying at his temples, and his forehead is lined with age.
Part of me almost wishes I could be a resentful bastard,
rub salt in his wounds before I give him what he's wanted for so long. But I've never really enjoyed being needlessly bitter. That shit just isn't for me, and if I can help it, I try not to be. His eyes flit to the welt on my cheekbone, the one that Thatcher gifted me. My father doesn't say anything about it, and I bet he's assuming it's from the hazards of security work.
Let's talk on the piano, he suggests. I'll grab a few cigars.
No, we aren't going to be long. I drop my boot to the ground. My father contributes a lot of money to Philadelphia General, and they'll easily let me restart my residency where I left off, so I'm not going to ask him to pull strings when my last name already will. Nepotism. It's real. My father glances at Maximoff and hones in on his bandaged shoulder. How's that healing?
It's all right, Maximoff says, not intimidated by anyone.
He keeps eye contact until my father has to look away. I'm about to speak, and then my father tells me,
if this is about Rowan, I hired him onto the med team because I've built trust with him. And thanks because of you.
Stop. I shut my eyes for a long, annoyed beat. Don't tell me that.
Then tell me why you're here, he says, cordial, non-confrontational.
He ambles to the kitchen bar and yanks open the fridge. Maximoff and I follow so we won't have to shout across the huge room. I rest my soul on the rung of a bar stool.
I came by to tell you that I'm finishing my residency.
My father pours a glass of ice water for my boyfriend, digesting my words slowly like he didn't hear me well. He scrutinizes my earpiece and mic to my radio.
This is the last week of security. I'm going back after that, I explain. I don't need anything from you right now, but I'm doing this because I want to be a concierge doctor.
You will be.
His face brightens like I've given him all he needs to die a happy fucking man. He never asks why I've had a sudden change of heart. I didn't expect the why to be important to him, and that's perfectly fine by me. He makes it easier to stay at a distance. I pop another bubble.
That's it.
I'll stay in touch for work. I lower my boot off the bar stool.
Good. I'll be available.
He pours a glass of water for himself, and he feels the need to tell Maximoff.
First-year doctors are filled with fear and doubt, and rarely do med interns run towards codes. But my son always did.
I didn't run towards codes, thinking I'd bolster the family name. I ran towards them because I was confident I could handle the pressure. And I wanted to help. That's it.
Maximoff curves his left arm around my shoulder.
You should be proud of your son, he says so entirely that I can feel his pride for me. For so much more than just this choice. My eyes are only on him.
I am proud now, my father tells Maximoff. But not these past years.
Of course not, I say.
He sighs. Ah, Pharaoh, you don't understand. You are gifted. More than me, more than your grandfather. You can't waste talent like that.
Why don't you tell Maximoff the story of how I came out to you? I ask to make a point that I've never made before. My father chooses this moment to take a sip of water. He clears his throat and glances at Maximoff with a shake of his head.
There's not a lot to say.
Because you don't remember. I stand more upright. It's okay. I hold out a genial hand. It's not a bad story. Shit, I actually like it. I touch my chest. You asked me about my crush. We talked for a few minutes and things were easy. They always were, but eventually you'd forget about that boy. You'd forget we even spoke.
That's not fair, he says. That was years ago.
Name one memory that doesn't involve medicine. He lets out a deeper sigh.
Ah, Pharaoh.
He's thinking, my life is entangled with medicine, but there are plenty of memories he could choose. My first high school dance, he let me take his Bentley to pick up my date. My mall excursion at 12 years old where I got my nose pierced. He signed the parental consent forms. My second grade chorus recital, he made me blueberry pancakes as a good luck do well thing. He exists in memories that are void of medicine, but he has trouble coming up with one. He just never placed value on any of them. While he raised me, he looked through one lens and never widened the scope. I know how this ends before it even does. I tell him it's okay. Don't worry about it. We exchange a few more words about medicine, and then I leave with Maximoff. I'm not clairvoyant, but that I can predict.
17. Maximoff Hale. Pharaoh, boxers or briefs? Gotta love paparazzi, asking the good questions. And by good, I mean trivial. Kind of funny if not predictable, but pretty trivial. You should know that I'm not annoyed, but I'm more than cautious. This is one of the first times Pharaoh and I have walked hand in hand on a sidewalk in Sinner City together. He's used to being the silent bodyguard companion. Not the boyfriend to a celebrity. The click, click, click of cameras that follow our trek to dinner, this is my normal. I have almost no recollection of walking without paparazzi in Philly. And it's all immortalized on videos they sold to tabloids. You've seen when I was a toddler, my dad threatened paparazzi who pushed too close to my mom while I was in her protective arms. Then I'd grow up and be the one holding my sister's hand. Yelling at paparazzi to stay back, she's only a kid. Now I'm 22, and if I could conceptualize a public first date scenario, it would have looked pretty close to this reality. 8 or 9 paparazzi crowding Pharaoh and me, cameras flashing in blinding succession and illuminating our features in the pitch black night. His unwavering, assured stride that matches mine, his aviators that block the exploding light, and his hand that squeezes my hand with each incoming question. As though to tell me, I'm okay, Wolf Scout. I don't know. It makes me smile. Maybe because this is my life and I've always tried to accept the crazy parts that I can't change. I love you! I love you! A middle-aged cameraman constantly praises. Being overly complimentary is a thing paparazzi do. Others will just try to piss us off for a money shot. Pharaoh! Maximoff! Who hogs the blankets? I steal a glance at Pharaoh. We're both pretty good about not hogging the comforter, and as the sweltering summer approaches, we've only been sleeping with a sheet. A smile plays at the corner of his mouth, and he squeezes my hand before telling them, "Definitely Maximoff, He's not changing our dynamic for them, for anyone. My lungs inflate in a bigger breath. In an alternate universe, I tell the cameraman, in reality, it's definitely Pharaoh. Every damn time. I picture his eyes rolling around the fucking globe behind his aviators. My Ray-Bans shield the incoming flashes that hike up a notch. Where's Jane? Family dinner at the Cobalt Estate. Why isn't Jane with you? My brain blares, first public date, first public date, first public fucking date. And my stomach does this weird flutter kick thing. Brain and body are way too excited at the prospect of tonight. It's not like I haven't been out with Pharaoh before. But in this capacity, it feels new. Pharaoh, are you on a date with Maximoff right now? His brows jump, surprised that they guessed right. Is this a date? What are you eating? Who's paying the bill? Pharaoh risks a glance at me, seeing if I want to answer. But I'm looking at him, trying to see the same thing. He's been selective about which media questions he'll respond to. I want him to do what feels the most comfortable and not be fucking pressured. Who thought of the date? Me. Where are you headed? We're nearing our destination. At the corner of the street, a red neon light spells out Tony's Pizza. I know, I know. Our first date is insanely inventive and revolutionary. Pizza. It only took me a solid month of overanalyzing. Pharaoh pushes back pieces of bleach white hair that fell to his lashes, and he subconsciously touches his belt, where his radio would normally be attached. He's only been off the security team for a couple days. We're both still adjusting. Ahead of us, my temp bodyguard for tonight marches like a brick house. I haven't been assigned a replacement yet. Is this a date? I let go of Pharaoh's hand and wrap my arm around his shoulders. Fucking Christ. Pain wells up, and I breathe out through my nose. My left arm is considered my good arm, but lifting one shoulder sometimes inadvertently moves the other. Outwardly, I'm stoic. Inwardly, I'm kicking my ass into another galaxy for not being more careful. My muscle throbs like a dull hammer. Just so you understand, I'm not dropping my arm. I plan to hold my boyfriend. So I'm fucking holding his shoulders. Sex is already challenging with the sling. I don't want to eliminate the forms of physical affection that I can finally do in public. As we near the pizzeria, Pharaoh sweeps my build a couple times, trying to study my state of being. He must have felt my body tighten. Flashes blink on my face like strobe lights in a horror film. So there's no way he's reading the pain that I barely reveal. Why hasn't Lauren tweeted about your relationship like Lily? My sore muscles bind at the mention of my parents. Pharaoh's careful stride never grows panicked or pissed. He knows my dad isn't enthusiastic about any couple relationships online, not even his own brothers. He mockingly calls my uncle and aunt raisins. On the semi-flip side, my mom overcompensates and will tweet 50 times a day about us. Hashtag Marrow for life. This is what love looks like, hashtag Marrow. Proud mom, hashtag Marrow. Fans created our coupleship name, and it really stuck after my mom used it. Does Lauren not approve of your relationship? I cut in. He does approve. My dad is just overprotective, and I think he feels like a better dad if he gives my significant other a hard time. I love you! I love you! Pharaoh picks up his pace, purposefully, so that my arm will fall off his shoulder. When it does, he swiftly catches my hand and I lengthen my stride, in line with him again. I replay his smooth-as-fuck moment over and over and over. My blood starts pooling south. I'm agitated and unbelievably hot, probably because I'm annoyed. Annoyance turns me on. Christ, that's a weird thought. We ascend a couple cement steps to the pizzeria, a glass entrance in sight. Last-ditch questions erupt in the air, most about my parents and Pharaoh. But our heads swerve back at this one. Did Pharaoh force you to quit the auction? I glower. Are you fucking kidding me? All of them thirst after that topic. Too many voices jumble. Slow down, Pharaoh snaps at the paparazzi. They let the middle-aged photographer speak. Celebrity Crush published an article tonight. Maximoff would never quit a charity event, and you're the only thing that's different in his life. The only thing that's different? I got into a fucking car accident, I yell, my neck straining, because your friends sped after my little cousin's car on a goddamn highway. They weren't our friends. They all disassociate. Farrell rolls his eyes. We've both seen these faces before. Paparazzi and Philly are a tight network of people who call each other when they spot someone in my family. Then they rush out and capture a money shot. I've always tried to empathize with them. And I get it. This is their job. But this is my life. And they need to know. It was my choice to quit the auction. I almost growl, needing to defend him. Not Pharaoh's. If anyone is territorial in this relationship, I motion back and forth between his chest and mine. It's me. Pharaoh tilts his head at me, his eyes raking me up and down. And he says, I'm just as territorial of you, Wolf Scout. He's not letting me take all the heat to protect him. We are a publicist's worst nightmare. Setting fire to our public images out of stubborn love. Tony's pizza smells like greasy cheese and beer, and after a half hour it's completely packed. Rowdy kids in soccer jerseys span a long checkered cloth table and help drown out the paparazzi outside. So do the mounted televisions that air the Stanley Cup and the NBA playoffs. But not much can distract my stupidly in love brain from him. It's not that bad, I say, while I pick black olives off my slice of supreme pizza and look up at Pharaoh, whose brows rise the longer I defend my motorcycle's capabilities. Our table is against the wall, and behind Pharaoh, an orange neon sign hangs that says true love, with a pizza between the words. I keep skimming him. All of him. He sits slightly sideways. His tattooed arm hangs casually over the back of his wooden chair, and he sat the sole of his boot on the empty seat next to him. Pharaoh Redford Keene is infuriatingly cool, and God, I can't believe he's mine. I'll never get over it. To think that I'd be here one day. On a public date with the only guy I've ever truly needed or wanted. It's a dream. He watches me, checking him out, and then his gaze drops down my naturally rigid body in a sweltering wave. I'm aware that I look ready for an Armageddon. I always fucking do. But I think about how Pharaoh is attracted to that part of me. To every part of me. I'm already comfortable in my skin, but he makes me love who I am times infinity. I feel the start of my smile. I could push 75 on it, I add, returning to the motorcycle talk. The corner of his mouth lifts with a short laugh. Your bike's throttle is shot. I couldn't even accelerate to 30 when I tried. If anything, I should be buying you a new bike for your birthday in July. He hoists his dish and holds it out to me. I scrape my black olives, which I hate and he loves, onto his pizza. You can't get me a bike, I say. I only got you a pair of boots for your 28th. He's wearing those boots right now. Rip up the birthday rulebook. Pharaoh folds his slice of pizza. Because if you want to start comparing the prices of our gifts to each other, I only spent $5 on you for Christmas. He smiles before taking a large bite of pizza. That $5 gift is buckled on my left wrist, an olive green wristwatch. Right beneath lies the gray paracord bracelet that he gave me out of the blue. And I loved that the watch was really cheap. He wasn't trying to replace my old one with something flashy. He gave me what fit me. Look, all I'm saying, I tell Pharaoh, is that if you buy me a bike, I'm gonna buy you one. I can't even ride a motorcycle until I'm out of this damn sling. You need it more than me. I've wanted to buy him one since he sold his FZ09 for the auction, and this whole conversation started because his residency begins tomorrow. He has to drive my Audi until he can get another vehicle. I offered my bike to him, and he called it a piece of shit. And that's how this spiraled here. I bite the thick pizza, bell peppers and sausage falling onto my plate. Fuck, I mumble. Pharaoh looks too amused, like he has me beat at something else. He's eating his pizza without an avalanche of toppings. Yeah, I don't fold and hold my pizza, and I don't know how he made that look cool. After he takes a swig of water, he tells me, okay, let's do this. His eyes meet mine. We're not gifting any bikes since we both need new ones. I can't afford a brand new MT-10, and that's the Yamaha I'd want. I'll split the cost with you. And then when you buy a new bike, we'll split the cost of that one. I swallow my food, thinking about this. So we'll both own both bikes. His pizza hovers near his mouth. Technically, my insurance will be on mine, but personally, I'd consider them both of ours. Both of ours. I repeat that. Both of ours. You're smiling, he points out before eating. Yeah, it's hard to grimace. What can I say? I like your personalities more than your technicalities. His ring clanks on wood as he taps his chair. He swallows his food. Technically, he starts, and I'm already groaning. Personalities don't exist. It's not a word. I fill my mouth with pizza to free my hand, and I flip him off. He rolls his eyes into a smile. As he eats the crust of his, I zero in on his cheek, where Thatcher hit him. The bruise is almost gone, but Jane has helped Pharaoh conceal the blemish with makeup whenever we go out. Pharaoh didn't want a tabloid to spin a story about me punching him. I'm still majorly pissed at Thatcher. More than even Pharaoh at this point. I don't understand why Thatcher keeps shitting on my boyfriend, and if he does it again, I'll snap on him. I told Jane what her bodyguard said, and immediately she told me, I won't speak to him. I can't. Out of loyalty to us, she's been on a gigantic silent treatment with Thatcher until further notice. I know it's hard for Janie. She likes to engage in conversation, even if it's a one-sided chat and the person rarely answers back. In the pizzeria, my gaze falls from his cheek to his carved biceps, more distracted by his tattoos than his muscles. An inked ribbon circles a compass with the words, Go your own way. The media keeps speculating what my next career will be. A recent headline, Maximov Hale, heir to 3 corporations, which one will he choose? You believe that I'll be hired to one of the family companies, Fizzle, Hale Co., or Haleway Comics. I can even help out at Superheroes and Scones, but I don't know where my heart is yet. What are you thinking? Pharaoh crumples a napkin. I retrace my brain's endless paths. I'm thinking about life, how I left my family legacy, and tomorrow, you're returning to yours. My head turns as someone approaches. A waiter brings over hot tea that I ordered. I thank him, the water steaming and cup too hot to touch. As he leaves, I tell Pharaoh, and how I have a gigantic load of free time. And maybe I should build a house with my bare hands or go into the wild and figure out the philosophical meaning of my fragile existence. And then I think about how I'd rather go into the wild with you, I add, and how my ass is better than your ass. Physical, mental, and sexual. Those are the routes of my mind. He looks me up and down, his earrings swaying. I have the better ass, but I can let you believe that you do. I picture his ass now, and I instantly imagine my cock sliding inside of him, and the way his muscles contract in scalding arousal. Fuck me. I blink a few times to avoid fantasizing. His knowing smile spreads wider and wider. I scowl. Your smile is ripping your face apart. Anatomically impossible, but nice try. He laughs as I grimace, and then my phone vibrates. Texts from my family. Asking about the date. It's been constant all night. I take out my phone just to ensure it's nothing serious. But I'm distracted. By you know who. Not Voldemort. Someone hotter. Not that I think the villain in the Harry Potter books is even remotely hot. Christ, stop thinking. Pharaoh tears apart a straw wrapper, his eyes falling to me before rising to the television. The Philadelphia Flyers are in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We both like watching pro sports, especially if our hometown is involved. But that's not what's getting me. His molten eyes fall back to me again, pricking my nerves, and then they lift to the TV. Eyes on me, then the TV, me. His lip rises, then the TV. My cock strains against my jeans. I'm aware that within the crowded pizzeria, phones are aimed at us. Some better hidden than others. We're being recorded from inside and outside. We're public. I remind myself that. We're public, and I'm allowed to touch my boyfriend. So I stand up about the same time that he drops his boot. He gestures me over, but I'm already heading to his side of the table. When I sit beside him, so close that my thigh is up against his thigh, and his strong arm wraps around my lower back, flashes ignite outside, glaring through the window panes. My temp bodyguard sits one table away, faking interest in his phone and bowl of soup. I briefly glance at my cell, too. No emergency text messages. All should be well. More flashes, more bright light. Paparazzi won't leave if I ask. The only way to fix this is to leave myself, and the cameraman will follow me. But out of all nights, I don't want this night to be short-lived. So I drape my left arm over his shoulders and ignore the thumping in my sore muscle. Pharaoh slouches a bit so my arm drops to a lower angle. 10 times less strain on my shoulder, but I'm still holding him. His inked fingers dip beneath my jeans band, not going far. Just enough to warm the skin on my waist with his skin. We tune out the gawking and the lenses. And we watch ice hockey in public. Clearly romantically linked. It's the most casual, ordinary thing. You have no idea how much this means to me. Maximov, hail! All of a sudden, a stocky guy in a local college sweatshirt approaches our table, and my temp bodyguard bobs up and down in his seat, hesitating to intervene. I usually let fans near. I motion to the bodyguard to sit. Pharaoh is superglued to the guy, even as he whispers to me, "Recognize him." 18. Maximov, hail. "No," I whisper back to Pharaoh, and then I smile at the guy who raises a hand in hello. I tell him, "Hey, man, I'm kind of busy tonight. I was just hoping for an autograph." He reaches over the half-eaten Supreme pizza, trying to pass me a napkin and a ballpoint pen. I have to take my arm off Pharaoh to grab both. To me, it's not a big deal to sign a napkin. It'll take a half a second and could make someone's day. But I notice how the guy checks over his shoulder and smiles impishly at a booth, a potted plant shrouding the other faces from view. It puts me on edge. But I don't falter, uncapping the pen. I'm right-handed, so this'll be sloppy. It looks nothing like my actual signature. "Whatever's good," he says distantly, zeroing in on Pharaoh. "Can I get your autograph too?" Pharaoh barely blinks. "I'll pass." He's turned down autographs and pictures before, but not with this much coldness attached. The college-aged guy almost smiles. This isn't a fan. "Here," I extend the napkin and pen to the guy. "Have a good night, man. Please leave. Please don't ruin my fucking date." Pocketing the autograph, the guy loiters for another half second, and stiltedly, like he's rehearsed this line with his friends, he tells me, "I didn't think Pharaoh was your type, Maximov. I thought you'd end up with a rich dick, not a fame whore." I narrow my eyes. "Are you fucking serious?" I said,
"Get the fuck out."
Pharaoh cuts in, standing up, but he can't usher him away that easily. I'm sure he wants to, but he's not a bodyguard or a bystander. He's a part of the confrontation. The guy laughs, then looks at me. "Is your boyfriend gonna hit me?" Pharaoh rolls his eyes. He's intimidating to most, but as my boyfriend, the worst of the worst kinds of humans will try to provoke him for 15 minutes of fame. Chair scraping back, I stand up next to Pharaoh. "Kids are here," I growl. "Go back to your goddamn booth." My temp bodyguard is speaking into his radio, hesitating. "You seem tense, Maximov." The guy takes a single step back. "That's what happens when you trade down."
"Fuck you," I sneer,
and Pharaoh fists the back of my shirt, because I almost lunge. Then he holds the back of my head, protective, comforting, telling me not to defend him, and let street hecklers get to me. "Take a breath."
"You're just like your dad," he smirks at me. "How's Reich Meadows doing, by the way?"
My fist stays at my side. Reich isn't my dad, but I've lost the urge or need to spit that truth. I don't move. I don't charge at him. But I also can't speak. Pharaoh raises his brows at the guy.
"Your opinions are fucking ugly. And we're not here for that shit. You want to fight? Go fight with the little fuckers you call friends."
He points at the booth. The guy chokes on a breath. He opens his mouth to say something else and then shuts it. His eyes dart to the left where my temp bodyguard finally nears. Pharaoh turns to him fast.
Call SFA and get a couple guys over here. We'll be in the bathroom until you kick the shithead out.
I'm not leaving,
the heckler snorts.
I look to the temp bodyguard. You have 5 minutes, I tell him, my voice stilted and firm. I'm just on automatic at this point. Pharaoh clasps my hand and quickly leads me through the packed restaurant, towards the men's bathroom. Everyone is looking, filming us. My eyes are on the bathroom door. And then hot liquid suddenly splashes my face. Fuck, I curse, rubbing the coffee off my burning cheek and temple. It's all so damn abrupt that I have no time to think. People gasp and shout, while others stand up from their chairs, cell phones pointed at me. Pharaoh shoves someone back and yells a threat that rings in my ears. I press the bottom of my shirt to my face that's on fucking fire. God damn it. I'm disoriented, catching shocked expressions. Some people are weirdly smiling while they film this with their phones. I miss sight of the culprit. But all the people recording are getting great footage. Maybe they're thinking about how much money they can sell it for, how many likes and retweets it'll get. I'm walling up. I'm shutting down. This is my first date.
Maximov,
Pharaoh says, hand falling back into mine. I'm not angry, just numb, and I fall in line with Pharaoh, able to open the door to the single bathroom first, and I slip inside. One out-of-order toilet stall, one urinal, and Sharpie and pen is scribbled along the chipped maroon walls. Pharaoh locks the door behind us. We're quiet. It's calmer here. I touch the stinging burn, and I glance at the mirror. Skin is bright, bright red along my cheekbone, beneath my eye, and beside my temple. He snatches paper towels out of the dispenser. Welcome to my world, I say dryly. He glances back at me while he turns on the sink faucet.
I've been in your world, Wolf Scout.
He runs the paper towels beneath cold water, then wrings them out. But now you're in it. In it, I tell him. His brows rise, turned to me.
You know I love your fucked up world, because you're in it, in it.
He uses air quotes and then presses the cold towel to my cheek and temple. Our eyes caress for a second, and I breathe deeper, better. He shakes his head a couple times, his jaw tightening.
I should have been faster.
Meaning he wishes he jumped out in front of me. I'm glad you weren't. Because in that alternate universe, he'd be the one with the stinging pain. He holds my gaze and then frowns at the burn, lifting the soaked paper towel that soothes my skin.
If your new bodyguard is as bad as that one, it's going to fucking kill me every time I leave you.
They won't be that bad. My hand glides up his back muscles, and I replay what happened. About what that guy said?
I'm okay, Wolf Scout.
Pharaoh holds the wet paper towel to my face again. His perpetual confidence fortifies him and me together, over and over and over.
You?
Yeah. My hand reaches his neck, about to bring his mouth to mine. A knock pounds on the bathroom door. Our heads turn.
I need to piss, dude. Hurry up.
On top of that hollering, Pharaoh's phone rings in his pocket. Without taking it out, he drops the call with one click. And then he kisses me, quickly, like a peck. Not what I want, but he tells me,
be patient.
I don't know that word, I say sarcastically.
Because I'm smarter than you.
Pharaoh soaks up my irritation like a sponge. I blink slowly. Thank you for the bucket of lies. I needed those. I cut myself off because his phone buzzes not once or twice, repeatedly, incessantly. Notifications start pinging too. We both frown. Pharaoh digs back in his pocket and pulls out his phone. I stand beside him, and he flips the cell over. Texts pop up, one after the other. OMG Pharaoh, 993-555-4343. Fuck me good, baby, 876-555-2908. You and Maximov are the cutest. Just wanted to tell you that, XOXO, 404-555-3888. Hey, asshole, Maximov is a good guy. He deserves better. 202-555-1010. Fuck you. He would have never canceled the auction. You're a horrible influence. I hope you die. 342-555-9876. That auction was for charity. You're too jealous for him. He could do way better. 161-555-2800. Maximoff should be with a cute soft boy that he can cuddle and love, not you. 675-555-4323. My stomach nosedives off a 100-foot cliff. We exchange a cautious look, and then his phone rings with an unknown number. Don't answer that, I tell him.
Wasn't going to.
Pharaoh skims the screen.
Give me your phone.
I pull my cell out of my pocket. At the same time, someone calls me. Caller ID, Oscar Oliveira.
Pharaoh takes my phone and I listen fixatedly. Ready and prepared for damage control.
Another DEFCON 1, here we fucking go. My boyfriend presses the speakerphone button.
Oliveira.
It's bad, Redford, he says. Your info has spread across the whole internet. Phone number, childhood address, names of your family, father, stepmom, stepsister, and ex-boyfriends.
Pharaoh shuts his eyes before they roll in a giant arc.
Your seventh grade MySpace page, Oscar continues. The name of your pet guinea pig.
Scuttlebucket. The only pet Pharaoh ever had died when he was 12.
Email address, any old usernames on social medias, a password to your bank account.
Where's the security tech team, I ask, and Pharaoh hands me my phone. He puts his own cell to his ear, calling the bank to freeze his accounts.
Tech team is preventing a phone hack. But hell, this info is coming from other sources, like Redford's friend of friend of friend's social media account spread over fucking years. Anytime he popped up in pictures or by name, people are connecting it together and finding more info about him. It's snowballing.
Pharaoh speaks hushed near the sink, talking to the bank. He's being doxxed, I realize. His private information is being leaked for public consumption. I've tried to prepare for this doomsday. I've told myself for years that it could happen to whoever I dated publicly. And I won't let anyone, especially doxxers, make me regret our decision to go public. But fuck those people who do this to human beings for shits and giggles. I've never had complete privacy, so I've never experienced what Pharaoh is going through right now. I imagine it's like you're suddenly being disrobed in front of the whole world, and you can't grab the robe back. And I hate that I can't shield him, that I have no power to protect him. All I can do is just be here. It doesn't feel like enough. Oscar tells me that the security team is calling an emergency meeting. Even though Pharaoh doesn't have a 24/7 bodyguard and he's not one himself anymore, he's still being protected by Alpha, Omega, and Epsilon. They're treating him like family. And I don't just mean a part of the Hales. I can't take credit for this. I think it's mostly because the security team loves him. I hang up with Oscar.
I need to piss!
Knocking on the door.
Fuck off, I yell.
Okay. Bye.
Pharaoh says before hanging up his call. He slips his phone in his pocket. He's relaxed, but there's a tinge of frustration and anger reddening his eyes that I can't miss. I just want to help. Any way that I fucking can. Pharaoh leans on the sink.
Looks like we're not going to be fighting over who pays for this date.
I near him. They drained your money?
$2,000 5 minutes ago. Gone. The bank flagged the activity and froze all of my accounts.
As soon as I'm in arm's reach, we draw together. Instinctively, our hands roam and hold and grip. He whispers,
I don't have any cash on me.
I trace the wings on his neck. I plan to pay anyway. He stares into me.
And I planned to ruin your plan.
His palm runs up my back, pushing me as close to his chest as possible without my sling. I hug him tighter around the shoulders. His jaw skims against my jaw. His fingers massage the back of my head before clutching harder. I don't let go of him. I can feel his chest collapse. I hold stronger, breath deepening. We stay in this embrace for a long moment, our pulses thumping together, and the world seems to go calm and quiet. As we pull back, our eyes say the same thing. Let's get out of here.
101K viewers and counting listened to me talk about boundaries on an Instagram live. Coffee thrown at my face, Pharaoh being doxed,